Are you ready to record the 10th episode?
Yes, I am.
10 episodes.
We're doing so well.
Exciting!
Squeak!
Yes. Frodo, should you just roll the intro then?
Let's roll the intro!
Yay!
Pika! Pika! Pika!
Okay, let's try this. Let's try this. Okay. Intro.
That's you, isn't it?
I've got to leave a gap. So I can insert the theme music.
We've got to put the keys in. Okay.
Don't lean on the desk, you're making thumps.
Sorry.
Okay. Can I roll the intro now?
You can roll the intro now. Please. Please be my guest.
Thank you.
Be my guest.
Oh, boy. What the? History. Hello and welcome to What the History, your fortnightly guide, well not guide so much, but your fortnightly taste of bizarre bits of history, brought to you by us. This is a terrible start, let's just keep on going. I am Trevor Holland and I am joined by...
Susie Holland.
Oh dear. And this is our 10th episode, and so very professional.
Yes. Oh, we're celebrating. Woo woo!
Yay!
Yay, us! Thank you to all our listeners. We love you. Mwah.
Yay! Okay, well, being our 10th episode, what do you have for us?
Okay, well, tonight I've got and it's stinking hot here in Brisbane, so please forgive us. That's probably why we're a bit funny tonight. The heat has somehow affected us.
So let's get on with this so we can get back into the air conditioning.
Okay, rightio. Sorry. Okay, tonight I'm going to talk to you about a guy called Robert Coates. Now, he's got the reputation of being the worst actor in history, and I've put a little bit of a question mark on that one there, because in this day and age of people being famous due to having little or no talent whatsoever, now I'll leave you to think of your own people, listeners. I know I have a few that spring to mind that start with K. K. And more K's. So there you go. But in the 19th century, there was a guy called Robert Coates. Now, who the hell is he? Well, this guy was made famous in his day for being the worst actor around. And what's more, he made a career of being famous for being awful. So I love this guy. Now, he was born in 1772 in Antigua, an island in the Western Indies. He didn't grace any stages in England until 1810, so this is where it's all set. He was obsessed by designing his own stage costumes and Shakespeare, so his two great loves. Robert had a very distinct on-stage clothing style, and when he played Romeo in Romeo and Juliet, his costume was, and I quote, a white feathered hat, blue spangled cloak, red pantaloons, dozens of diamonds.
Stylish.
Very stylish. I reckon Liberace would have loved this outfit. He probably modelled it on him, bless his little heart. Now, on one occasion, he designed his pantaloon size, his pantaloons a size too small, causing them to split on stage. Oh dear. Wardrobe malfunction. It was undoubtedly the high point of his performance. And, end quote, that wasn't all what they said, what I said in there as well, but you'll get the general gist. Now, I have to put another costume design description in because it's an absolute scream. Now, again, I quote, it was a species of silk so woven as to give it the appearance of chased silver. That's C-H-A-S-E-D, not the other kind of chased. From his shoulders hung a mantle of pink silk edged with bullion fringe, and around his neck was a kind of gorget, richly set with jewels, and at his side was a handsome gold-hilted sword, end quote. Now, isn't that beautiful? Now, not content to confine the costumes to the stage, he'd also shown their finery out on the street, sometimes riding in his self-designed carriage in the shape of a kettle drum, decorated with roosters, and the motto, while I live, I crow. Oh, bless his little heart. Now to his stage work. and I use that term maybe loosely, Robert would frequently forget his lines and do improvisation of the script and actions, leaving his co-performers to just follow his lead, which I reckon would end up a hell of a lot of confusion. He had also changed the ending of Shakespearean plays. Again, with Romeo and Juliet, Robert decided that opening Juliet's tomb with a crowbar would be better. Okay. During the play, on the line, "Oh, let us hence, I stand on sudden haste," he remained on the stage and the prompter told him to get off, and Robert replied within earshot of the audience, he would go as soon as he found his buckle. I would have loved to have seen this guy in action. During his performance as Lothario in a play called The Fair Penitent, Robert got upset with his audience when he was performing the pivotal tomb scene as they called out repeatedly, "Why don't you die?" And it is said that Lord Byron attended a play that Robert performed in and reported in 1811, a Mr. Coates performed Lothario in a damned and damnable manner. So even Lord Byron didn't like him. But Robert was pretty well off, as he was heir to the family-owned sugar plantations in Antigua, and if theatre managers threatened to boycott him, he would simply bribe them to book him. When his fellow cast members were worried about the wrath of the audience and thereby refused to perform with him, Robert would turn up with armed guards to pacify them, which I think is really sweet. Because he knew he was not that great, so he was going great lengths to actually help people. And if he didn't get lead roles, he would simply start up his own production. On ya. If the audience heckled him, he would give back as good as he got and duck flying rotten fruit and vegetables if they came his way. But he even performed for the Prince Regent. So Robert was popular for not being such a great actor and obtained a very loyal following, and people used to come to see if he was as bad as they had heard, and in 1816 he gave his last performances as the joke was over for audiences and his fortune dwindled, and after Robert was hit by a carriage in 1848, Robert Coates was no more. Sad. But I really like this guy. He didn't give stuff about what other people thought about his talent or lack thereof. He just did what he wanted. He brought laughter to his audience and it made him famous. Touché, Mr. Robert Coates. And what the history, good sir. And I bow to you.
Lovely.
Oh, I curtsy because I'm a girl, I think.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. It'd be great if you were still around and like doing movies now.
I think it'd be absolutely hilarious.
It would give me perfect fodder for, you know, the redeeming features for the Rufus Project. Oh, a very unsubtle plug. RufusProject.com.
I see what you did there. That was a nice segue.
Woo!
You cheeky monkey.
Well, you know.
Yep. All right. Went in rhyme. And over to you, Trev. What have you got?
Well, from bad actors to, well, bad music, I guess. This is another quite recent one, by the way. In relatively recent times, the Cause song has become famous for raising money, awareness, or making a statement. These include songs such as We Are the World, and Do They Know It's Christmas, and even Sun City. I'll try that again.
Hey, I'm gonna play Sun City.
That's the one. And these songs were written respectively by the likes of Michael Jackson, Bob Geldof, and Stephen Van Zandt of Bruce Springsteen's E Street Band, and performed by cavilations of some of the biggest musical artists at the time.
Collaborations, whatever.
Let's just be honest. Too hot.
Sorry.
Now, these were extremely effective in raising awareness, money, and the like for their various causes. Now, fighting famine and bringing attention to injustice are very noble causes.
Mm-hmm.
However, sometimes the causes behind the songs were a little more, well, what the history? Let us go back to 1985, where some pretty major stuff was going down. Something that had been an institution for over 20 years was under threat. Something known worldwide had not been seen for a year and a half, and people were extremely worried it would not be seen again. Was there some exotic wild animal or a historical artifact under threat? Nope, it was a TV show, Doctor Who. And we're Doctor Who fans, by the way.
We love Doctor Who. Woo! Yes. Proud Whovians, represent.
Even with some of its less glamorous history, so let's get moving on.
Yes, yes.
So since 1963, the Doctor's adventures through time and space had been constant, surviving multiple actors playing the lead role, and even more for his ever-changing roster of companions. So what went wrong? Well, after the incredibly popular reigns of Tom Baker and Peter Davison,
yay!
The Time Lord's mantle was passed on to Colin Baker, a veteran actor of stage and TV who was destined to bring a very different take to the show. Colin's Doctor was much more aggressive, with an arrogance and temper made to be just as garish as the rainbow-coloured coat he wore. This was exacerbated by constant arguing and quite often vindictive fighting with his companion Perry, played by Nicola Bryant, whose screen presence seemed more focused on cleavage than personality.
Ain't that the truth?
Fans did not like the change, and when the 1984 season finished with super low ratings, the hiatus began. After 18 months, talks of cancelling Doctor Who altogether commenced, and one fan in particular decided something must be done to save it. Enter music writer and producer Ian Levine, who had written and produced songs for artists including the Pet Shop Boys, Bronski Beat and Bananarama, as well as writing the theme song for the Doctor Who spin-off show K9 and Company. Definitely a fan.
Mm-hmm.
He was at the head of public protest against the potential axing of the show, and he knew exactly what to do about it. Ian wrote a pop song.
Yay!
And put out a call for high-profile music artists to join the cause. Speculation was high that the likes of Elton John and Holly Johnson of Frankie Goes to Hollywood fame, both self-confessed Doctor Who fans, would be joining the cause. While Ian didn't get anyone that high profile, he still got some known artists to join his supergroup, which was called Who Cares?
They could have chosen a much better name.
Yeah.
That is utter bollocks.
Now, the members of Who Cares included Bobby G from Bucks Fizz, Justin Haywood and John Lodge, both from the Moody Blues.
How could you, Justin?
Rick Buckler, who was the drummer from The Jam, Warren Cann from Ultravox, and actors from the show, including the Doctor and his assistant, Colin Baker and Nicola Bryant, Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart, Nicholas Courtney, and even the Doctor's greatest adversary, the Master himself, played by Anthony Ainley.
Oh, Anthony.
The song written for this powerhouse of musicians and actors was Doctor in Distress, an attempt to summarise 22 years of Doctor Who into a 3-minute pop song. Recorded on a BBC soundstage, with footage being taken of the various participants in front of a TARDIS, the song was released on 15th of March of 1985, with the promise that all proceeds would go to a cancer charity. Even with this beneficial extra, the song performed atrociously. Even the home of Doctor Who, the BBC, refused to play the song due to its low quality and terrible lyrics. Upon reflection, Ian Levine stated, quote, "It was an absolute balls-up fiasco. It was pathetic and bad and stupid. It tried to tell the Doctor Who history in an awful high-energy song. It almost ruined me."
Oh, poor end quote. Ian.
Now, here is a taste of the lyrics, minus the attempts to imitate characters from the show. 18 months is too long to wait. Bring back the Doctor. Don't hesitate. It was a cold, wet night in November, 22 years ago. There was a police box in a junkyard. We didn't know where it would go. An old man took two teachers into time and space. It started off a legend that no one could replace. Doctor in distress. Let's all answer his SOS. Doctor in distress. Bring him back now. We won't take less.
Dear God.
For those game, we'll be adding an excerpt from the song at the end of the podcast. And if you're really, really game, there's a link to the video for it down below. If you check it out, you'll definitely be saying, what the history?
Exactly. Now, before we did this podcast, I asked Trev if I could watch the video again. And I am really, really regretting it. Because you know what? Freaking song is in my head. It won't go.
It's bad like that.
It is so bad. It's the worst earworm ever. It's really bad. I'm very, very happy that they, you know, gave money to cancer charities. And that's really, really great. But this is really, really bad. Okay. Yeah. It is. Oh God.
So click on the link below and enjoy the song. Oh,
you poor people.
Oh boy. And, well, I think that brings episode 10.
Double figures.
Of What the History to a close.
Bad actors, bad songs. We've got it all here.
Yes, we do. This has been quite an interesting one. And, if you have liked what you listened to, you can always leave a comment. You can go to our homepage, wthpod.rufusproject.com, and leave a comment below this episode, or get in touch with us through Facebook, the What the History podcast Facebook page, or find @pod_what on Twitter, or even use the hashtag WTHpod. If you don't do any of that, you can email us at WTHpod@rufusproject.com. Whew.
And I've just seen that one of the sources down here, I have to do this, the sources for Trev's story here. Who cares? As the story of Doctor in Distress, the worst little cause rock single of them all. Confessions of a Pop Culture Addict.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yes, oh, by the way, I should mention all our links. All the links to our references are in the podcast description down below.
That's right.
So there is actually good stuff to check out down there, as well as Doctor in Distress.
Yeah, see, we actually reference things. We're good like that.
Indeed we are. So I think that brings episode 10 to a close.
Yep.
If you listen when we stop babbling, like I said, there will be a little bit of Doctor in Distress. Not enough to worry about copyright stuff, but just a little bit at the end as a taster. And but aside from that, until next time, when we... Yeah.
It's the heat.
It is the heat.
Oh, yeah, we're doing well tonight.
Here we are. But please join us next time when we come back with more bizarre bits of history to make you say,
What the history? Good night, everyone.
Farewell.